This is the Power Aesthetic Podcast. I'm Paul Wagoner, and today we are talking about lucid dreaming and the concept of consciousness, awareness, and awakeness. I'm a little bit sick. I'm still recovering from a couple weeks of illness and time on the road, so just sort of feeling like I'm coming back into reality. And during the time I was on the road, I was like zonked out on a bunch of cough medicine. And, you know, since I've been back, I've been sleeping a lot. And as I've been sleeping, I've been experiencing quite a few lucid dreams, which happen for me from time to time. But lately have been happening sort of more often. And it started to put an idea in my mind about something that I wanted to share with you guys, which is that a lucid dream, you know, there's been millions of dollars have exchanged hands researching lucid dreaming and selling lucid dreaming and products and educationals and all the rest of this kind of stuff to help you lucid dream, largely because the idea of lucid dreaming is one that interests people so much. The concept that while we are asleep, we can be aware of the fact that we're dreaming, and that we can begin to consciously control that dream and to accomplish things within that dream that we can then bring back into our waking reality. There's been a lot of studies done on this about how when you're lucid dreaming, you're in REM sleep, but parts of your brain that are deactivated during normal sleep are activated, and so on and so forth. And so people are very interested in this idea of lucid dreaming, and I've often wondered why, because it hasn't produced a great deal for me of valuable insights, perhaps a few into the nature of who I am as a person. I think that it's interesting to see what your first impulses are when you begin to have lucidity during a dream. Especially when I was young, most of my impulses tended toward the extreme, the extremely violent. When I became aware that I was in a dream and there was no consequence, it was interesting to note where my mind immediately went. And I think then that can tell you certain things about who you are at your core. If there were no consequences, what you might do and how you might be as a person. But with all that being said, I think that maybe the most interesting concept of lucid dream is this one of its definition. As most of you guys know, I'm really into definitions and etymologies of words. In the words of Dennis Hopper, I find that shit fascinating. And a lucid dream is defined as a dream in which the dreamer becomes aware. But this word lucid means expressed clearly, easy to understand, consciously in control of events. And it has an old word because it comes from the same Latin root for light, for lux, interestingly enough, the same root word as Lucifer, light bringer, and to be shining, to be illuminated, to be bright. My argument is that most people who experience a lucid dream are not experiencing a lucid lifestyle, and that even in their consciousness, being in the waking world, are essentially still operating within a dream, because the difference between lucid dreaming and regular dreaming is that in a normal dream, these sights, these feelings, these sensations, one is not in conscious control of them. You are sort of more like an observer there. And my argument is that most lives are not lucid in that most people are not really in control of their sensations, their feelings, their environment, their lifestyle, their habits. Lucidity means easy to understand, you know, easy to figure out, expressed clearly, consciously in control. I think that those words don't define the vast majority of people. I think those words define a very small minority of people and are the great difference between people who are someone and people who are as yet no one and who are still asleep. So as we consider this, I guess the real question then starts to become, how do we become awake and lucid in this waking dream or this waking world that we're having? And I think that, you know, there are a few ways to do this and to sort of maintain control or to grasp and maintain control during this waking consciousness, which may be one of many realities and many multiverses or whatever. But without getting too ridiculous with that stuff, I think that we can begin to attain clarity and alertness through cultivating clarity and alertness, by which I mean it's important that we go through our day with our eyes open. It's a no-brainer and seems like maybe useless information or unimportant information, but I think that so many of us go through our day-to-day in such a state of non-wakefulness, of non-alertness, of non-lucidity, that we are operating, and studies have been shown or have been done to show that like a huge percentage of an individual's day is habitual. There are good reasons for some of this, because it frees up space in our brains to not have to remember to do everything, but to be able to do it habitually. But I think that there is a big difference between conscious habit and compulsion and unconscious habit, things that you do simply because of repetition and things that you do because you desired the repetition, you consciously willed the repetition. And in my understanding and the stuff that I've talked about before when we've discussed geometry and pattern, I believe that this is the difference and the distinction that I draw between pattern and habit, is that habit can be something that happens unconsciously. Habit can be something that creeps its way into your life and becomes something that you follow because it's an unconscious pattern, where the patterns that I'm referring to that shape our greater geometry are willed patterns. They're conscious patterns. They're things that we have assembled as an architect would assemble in order to create the geometry, the construct that we are looking to build, rather than be an amalgamation of many dissonant patterns that create one large, ugly, unattractive, and ineffective whole. I think that we can begin to do this by simply maintaining like an action meditation, a meditation of fury, as like Suzuki Shosan, I think his last name is, has a book about the diamond mind, and it's about maintaining this furious type of meditation that keeps one's energy levels extremely high, so that weak thoughts and distractions and sort of illusion and wandering mind does not occur, because we've honed our sort of ferocious energy level with this kind of meditation to be high, and we keep the fire stoked at all times so that we are alert and aware and ferocious all the time. I think that those words are good words to apply to our general approach to life. We should be those things. We should be alert, aware, and we should be ferocious at all times. I think this takes constant conscious attention. When we feel ourselves drifting or wandering or sort of going into these dreamlike sort of black holes of time, where all of a sudden this time is gone. You know, we may be driving somewhere and our mind wanders and we habitually drive somewhere. This happens a lot if I'm going somewhere near somewhere else. You know, I'll accidentally drive to the other spot because the first part of the pattern felt the same and I'm unconsciously going through it and I go to the wrong place. It happens if you're on your phone too long. You can just start losing time, getting caught in these loops of like email to Google search to Instagram to whatever it is that's eating that time, because we're sort of allowing ourselves to be lulled into this state of deadened consciousness. Drugs and alcohol abuse and stuff like that, depending on how they are used / abused, can also, they can do one or the other. There's a sacrality to substances and there is a profanity to substances. And I think that they exist in this consciousness for a reason. But a lot of them certainly can deaden, and become habitual. And We use them sometimes in order to defy alertness and awareness, because alertness and awareness and ferocity are a challenging, heroic and warrior-like way to go through life, and many people do not want that. And even sometimes those of us who do want that find ourselves at times unequal to the task and desiring some kind of potion to deaden that. And this is why I think a lot of intelligent and artistic people often are drawn into the lure of drugs and alcohol. But we can also begin to consciously create our dreamscape, our environment, who is in it, what we do, and who we are, by understanding that if we are lucid, we have control. There's nothing stopping me. This isn't some kind of solipsism where I think the danger with some of this kind of thinking, oh, well, my waking life is just a dream. I don't mean that your waking life is just a dream and that it's not real or that it's not important. It's the only reality we have as yet in some ways. We have our inner realities and our outer realities, but it's not to say that no one else is real or nothing else is real. It's to say that I have control over what I choose to put in and bring into my reality, my dream. So I can choose to be with other people who are lucid. I can choose to create my environment, and I can choose in that environment to be what and who I want to be, because nothing is stopping me. This is like a mantra for me, this idea. Nothing is stopping me. I look at certain things and you say, you know, do you want to be a black belt in jiu-jitsu? Go ahead. Nothing is stopping you. You can do that. Do I want to be a millionaire? Shoot. Nothing is stopping you from becoming a millionaire. There are self-imposed limitations. There are fears. There are inadequacies and insecurities and all the rest of this kind of stuff. But that's not an external force stopping you. That's you deciding that you weren't lucid enough. You were not shining or bright enough to bring these in a clear expression into your environment. And I think that's fucking bullshit. And I think it's a huge cop-out, because nothing is stopping us. The doors are all there in the temple, and we hold the keys to each and every one of them. It's just that we can only go through so many doors at once in the time that we have allotted, because the dream doesn't last forever. We have to choose. This idea of patterns, not habits, I'm gonna share with you some of the deep lore. One of the books that had the most impact on my thinking process, and this is gonna sound pretty weird, but probably not for most of the people who know me. When I was about 15 or 16, somewhere in there, I was moving around the country a lot. And when I was about 16, I guess 17, for years I had been interested in occult stuff, esoteric stuff, and all the rest of this, and had read ad nauseum Crowley and Austin Osman Spare and Israel Regardie and fucking all the big guys, you know, all the big names and all the grimoires and all this stuff, and found it really lacking in a lot of application and grounding in reality, the reality that I was living in and was interested in. And long story short, I wound up back on my own living out in Cheyenne, and everyone told me, you've got to meet this guy, Thomas. He's interested in a lot of the same stuff as you. He's a wild guy. He's had an insane life, and I think you should talk to him. And I did. And without getting too much into all that or giving away too much stuff about him that he might not like giving away, I basically placed myself into a kind of apprenticeship with him where I said, you obviously have a very deep understanding of all this stuff, and I see the way that you live, and I see the effect of this stuff on your life, and your life is one that I look at, and it's enviable in all the ways that I think this stuff leads to an enviable life, and give me some answers here. And he said, okay, I'm going to have you read two books, and he had me read two, and he said, after you're done reading them, come back to me and talk about why you think I had you read those books in particular and what were the important parts. One book was whatever. It was something that probably everybody reads who's on this road, and there was some valuable insights there. But the other one was The Great Book of Amber by Zelazny. It's a fantasy book. It's a novel, a series of novels, rather. But in it, without trying to dive too deep into the storylines, I like to keep these things short, but within the book, there's a royal family, and their great power is that all of them are vying for control of this place, Amber, which is basically the center of the real multiverse. Every other world is just a shadow world of the real one. And in Amber, in this palace there, underneath it, is this thing called the Pattern. And members of this royal family can walk this pattern, which is extremely dangerous. If you start walking it and you fail to finish, you'll die. And as you walk it, the resistance becomes more and more intense as you pass through a series of what they call veils, where you walk through, and as you're going through one of the veils, it becomes extremely intense. And then as you break through that, the resistance drops a little and so on. But that once you walk it, you're given the power to traverse these other worlds, these other dimensions, and to basically create other dimensions, other worlds. And that how one gets to Amber in the book is you create, say you're walking through the woods and you're not in Amber, you're in some shadow world. You start walking, and with your mind, you begin bringing this world that you're walking in more and more in line with Amber, with the real world. And as you do so, sights begin to change, colors change, things become more and more close to how you know they are at the center of the universe. And then by the time you've made everything perfect, boom, you're there. And I told him I thought those were the two most important parts of the book. One was this idea that we get to control our reality and that we get to create it as we move through it. And second, that this idea of patterns and of walking specific patterns in order to gain power, not only over ourselves, but to increase our power, our ability to meet and destroy resistance, and our ability to go anywhere and do anything. And that what I felt like the pattern represented was specific disciplines that we create for ourselves that I saw almost as these geometric concepts of, like, the way I would look at summoning circles and all the rest of this, these big geometric constructs in these grimoires, where I would look at it and say, one could take this and one could write all these different things that one needed to accomplish in sort of almost this linear fashion, like a skill tree in a video game. And once you had done all those things and walked that pattern, it's like completing this huge enchantment that took you however long it took you to do, but that now you own that and you have that enchantment on you, as it were. And as I started looking at things like this, it opened up a certain sense of imagination and awe and belief in my own abilities in me that I've maintained to this day. I'm sitting here right now as I pace around the room recording this on my phone, looking at journals that take up almost one whole shelf of my bookshelf that go back to 2002, right during the time that I'm talking to you about now. I was 17, about maybe 18 in 2002. And ever since then, I've been creating and breaking and recreating and attempting to walk specific patterns in order to create these changes in my world and these, like, fucking enchantments that surround me. And all they are things that I've decided to add to who I am, to learn, to attempt to master, to accomplish. And some of these weird geometric constructions involve one or all of those things at the same time. They involve accomplishments. They involve needing to learn things before this can happen. X must occur before Y, and so on and so forth. And some of these journals look like fucking mathematical treatises on, or geometry treatises. And this system of codifying my way of getting through this reality in such a way has allowed me to look at this reality in the fashion of a lucid dream, in that I have clear expression of where I'm going, what I'm doing. I look around me in my house, that's in the woods, that's on the land, that's surrounded by a long haul and all this other stuff and all these other projects that spreads out for acres and acres. I can look out at the influence that I've had on other things, and I can track it all to specific things that I've done. And this world, this reality that I live in, it's real. I've created it with the assistance of many others who decided that we would link our geometry together. We would tie our dreams together into one large dream. And we've created a dream large enough that we could all live within, subsist in, and be fed from this one dream. And so what I want you to think about mostly when it comes to this is that there are no chains. There is nothing stopping you in this reality from doing whatever it is that you want. You're a magician, essentially, with all these tools that are there for you to use them and for you to learn their use and to decide exactly what will I be, exactly what will my Camelot look like, what quests and whatever will I send myself on. And I know at a certain point I don't want this to sound too like gamified, because it is a game, but it's the only game we ever get to play. So it's an important game if we decide to take it seriously. But as seriously as we take it, many of the things that we are doing during it are still just a game. We can play them. We can walk away from them. We can throw the dice. We can step away from the table. We can come back. But ultimately, we have control over how we feel. And we don't have control of it immediately. One has to practice lucid dreaming. But you can attain control over any of these things until you would read a description of lucid dreaming, which is the individual has conscious control of the sights, the sounds, the sensations, the feelings that are occurring in that reality. I can clearly express, my life is expressed clearly. It can be looked at and be easy for people to understand. This is what this is. And that it can be a representation of that third interpretation of the word. It can be shining, it can be bright, and it can be illuminated. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this. If you enjoyed it, please share with others. Consider coming on board as a supporter of the podcast. As many of you know, I've recently been deplatformed again from social media and so on and so forth. So make sure you check out the links, share the Telegram, follow the Telegram, and stay up with the emails and everything like that to see where I'm going next. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I hope you found this valuable in some way and that you're able to use this to make your life more how you want it to be, however that is. Get out there and do something amazing today, and I'll talk to you later.